Good day.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Cleveland.
And I'm Seattle Polychick.
And this is episode number 5.
5 already.
5.
Insecurity.
Yep.
Super creative.
Yeah, and it's a topic that I think everyone really deals with no matter what. And unless you're one of the freaks that are always super positive that think that they're walking on air.
Super positive freaks.
Oh, yeah, they're super positive freaks, and they think that they're the shit, and they don't realize that people think that they're typically dicks.
Oh, how ironic is that? People who have no insecurity, I actually know people who don't exhibit a lot of insecurity, they are dicks.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, you're right.
Because they think that they're just walking on air, that they're the shit.
Hmm.
But
of course, the reverse is true, too. I've known, like, really beautiful, amazing, talented, wonderful people who are so insecure. It's like that's their crippling downfall.
Because, yeah, they think that they're being judged all the time.
Right.
But.
So I guess we're going to talk about the middle of the road insecurity.
Yeah, like the normal person's insecurity.
As if we're normal.
Yeah. And of course, Polly brings a whole new layer of complexity to the whole insecurity game, because you're not just dealing with one relationship, you're dealing with a plethora of relationships. Mm-hmm. And
I say all the time, it's the relationship Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can all get gold medals.
It could that be would
like
rock.
It's like the new third grade where everyone gets a medal. That'd be cool.
Of course, now you're comparing.
No, because everyone gets first place.
Oh, everyone gets first place. Oh, okay. That's worth nothing then.
Yeah.
Mm, compare and despair. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of vital in talking about insecurity. We have a little tiny, you know, cheat sheet of a few things we want to talk about. We didn't talk about the whole compare and despair thing, but... That's huge for insecurity for me.
And it's the moment that you're... it is on the cheat sheet a little bit.
Oh, is it?
And it's just the notion of competition.
Mm, yes.
And whenever you're comparing yourself up against someone else, it's like, you know, oh, they're better in bed, you know...
Prettier, smarter.
Prettier.
More fun.
Has a bigger cock, can...
Thinks of cooler date shit.
Yeah, and, you know, all of these things, they're... You can think about all of this to death.
Yeah.
Where all you're doing is instead of actually, in the end, you shouldn't even really be competing with other people in terms of what you're doing. You know, if someone has a bigger dick than me, there's no way that I could compete.
Well, there are cock sheets.
There are.
Strap-ons. Dildos.
True, but I...
So, I mean, if that was a big issue, you could just get one of those.
If you were a size queen, then you know, there would be ways of accommodating. But the best way to, and for me to do it, is to make the most of, you know, the average me that I have.
Oh my God, you totally make the most of that. You know, I got to stop talking about your oral skills or people are going to, like, hunt you down.
Oh, I was just talking about my cock, but now that you bring up oral skills. So that's one thing that I'm not insecure about.
No?
No. I've had many good reviews, so...
Hmm, yes. Ironically, his gal from Cleveland, the one that visited a short while ago, we were chatting today. We emailed a little bit. She's a blogger also. I'm not going to say where her blog is until I get her permission at some point.
Yeah, I have a type, I suppose.
You like them nerdy.
Nerdy and bloggy.
So anyway, we were emailing back and forth to each other. You know, we'd read each other's blogs and we're having little bloggasms and whatnot. And so we were talking about Cleveland today and we were comparing notes. And I worried that when she found my blog, she would be, well, insecure or upset, you know, about things that she would read about you. But she actually liked it very much. She liked knowing that you were having fun and she cares about you. And, you know, she was pretty thrilled that someone else was appreciating your oral ministrations because she's cool like
Yay.
That. So insecurity.
Yeah.
What kind of areas, whatever, do you get most insecure?
I think the biggest thing for me, I think, is really shyness. I'm naturally a very shy person, which doesn't really come out as much being that I'm a blogger and I'm talking about my sex life now and whatnot. But it really is not crippling, but it's something that really shapes the way I operate around people.
How so?
Oh, and one thing is, I don't recognize faces.
Oh, yeah. What's that called again?
Prosopagnosia, face blindness. And that makes me really insecure just in a day-to-day life. Not necessarily sexually, but, I could go to work and I know I should recognize someone and I don't. And that makes me really insecure just on an everyday basis. And other things like let's say today it got a little bit warm in the room and there's a certain sense of insecurity in terms of like performance anxiety. If
it got a little warm in the room when we were fucking.
Yes. And the hydraulics weren't up to snuff at the moment because it turned like 95,000 degrees in here.
It was really hot, in your defense.
Yeah. But, so things like that. And there's a lot of anxiety there, at least from a guy perspective.
So performance anxiety.
Yeah, there's performance anxiety, yeah.
Okay.
And if you look just on TV and, how many, dick pills there are, and there's seemingly an endless supply of men that are willing to spend hard-earned cash to combat that.
For sure. So your sexual insecurity, would you say that it centers on things like performance anxiety?
In terms of sexually, I think that that's probably the biggest one where, and like many things, it really winds up being like a self-reinforcing cycle. The more you worry about it, the more you think about it, the more it actually becomes real.
Yes.
And
a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And it's, the whole what if. The more you think about the what ifs.
Ooh, before we get to what ifs.
Okay.
So female performance anxiety. I mean, I don't know that I can speak for all women, but...
You are now.
Yeah. I'm now speaking for all women. I don't really get performance anxiety as far as hydraulics. I don't worry that like, oh gosh, I'm going to get, soft or dry or I don't know. I think I worry more about performance anxiety, like, how well my performance would be perceived. I think like I'll have those thoughts of like, I'm too loose. I'm too dry. I'm too wet. I'm boring. Am I moving my hips enough? Am I moving too much? Do I look weird when I come? Am I getting all flushed? Am I looking fat? That
getting all flush is kind of hot, by the way.
Oh, really?
And it's...
Oh, I'm fucking hot then, because I'm very fair and I flush quite a lot.
And at least to me, it shows me that I'm doing my job.
Nice.
So...
Yeah, and well, I think that actually is part of what combats that, right? Like, I think, when you're fucking, you're supposed to look a mess. You're supposed to get messy hair and be sweaty and flushed and whatever. So, like, worrying about, like, how perfect do I look, like, is really not awesome.
Yeah, it's like, it's not sexy trying to put on your best porn star O-face.
No, it's not sexy at all.
It might be
sexy. And
it's
not sexy to be taking out of the moment. To be, yeah.
Because now you're thinking about it.
Right. Like, I try to do a little bit of thought control when I'm in bed, honestly. And honestly, this is part of why I think I'm so orgasmic now. I've gotten pretty good at thought control. So when I start to kind of veer off and think like, oh gosh, is he bored? He looks kind of bored. Like, instead of, going down that range, like... Wow, I'm boring. I'm a boring lover. He thinks I'm lame. Blah, blah, blah. Like, that makes me lame, right? Instead of, like, when I have that thought of, like, oh, God, he thinks I'm a boring lover. Well, what can I do right now to make it more fun? I could cant my hips. I could squeeze him. I could, you know, grab him. I could play with his nipples. Whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to kind of direct myself back into it. And part of that, I think, is being gentle with your thoughts. Like, these thoughts are going to come and these thoughts are going to occur. And you just sort of corral them back to where they need to be.
Yeah. And it's because if you're only thinking about stuff, then the loud ice.
Yeah. I'm addicted to rhubarb dry soda. And
my favorite. Not a sponsor, drink. Unfortunately. We don't have any. But
they
sponsors.
Could be if they wanted to. Dry soda. Anyway.
Let's see, where was I? That it's so easy to think about and overthink everything. And you just get lost in a this like sea of what ifs in your head.
Oh yeah.
Of, you know, am I doing something? What if they don't like it? And then you start going down a slippery slope where if you have a list of, you know, 20 different things that could go wrong, then you start going down the path of, well, what if all 20 of them went wrong? Oh my God, he's going to leave me. She's going to leave me.
Wah, wah, wah.
And the more you think about it, the more you get paralyzed doing anything because you've already decided that everything is going to go wrong. Everything is gone to shit. And then it's really a self-fulfilling prophecy because now you're not doing anything. You're kind of stuck there because you can't will yourself to actually move in any direction, left or right, or doing anything because you're constantly worried about everything that can go wrong as opposed to trying something and it just might go right.
This is true.
And if it goes wrong, then try something else. Eventually, you'll find something that goes right.
Right. This is true. And if we're paralyzed by fear and try nothing, of course, that's a self-fulfilling thing, too. That's, you know, that is a choice. Like, choosing nothing is still making a choice. That whole, I think that that's also, like, being in the moment and being positive. I mean, not just sexually with the what-ifs, but, like, so one of the things that kind of sparked our whole idea of insecurity this week was, you know, I was feeling insecure this week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going through a divorce and, you know, it's hard. It is kind of rocking my foundation a bit. I am questioning things. And I think I'm doing overall well, but this week with Traveler, I started to think like, you know, I've been with this guy about a year and I really love him and, you know, I'm falling for Cleveland and what is it, you know... I felt insecure about this. Like, with everything tying my husband to me, it still didn't last. Mm-hmm. He still left. And really, there's nothing tying you to me. There's nothing tying Traveler to me. We're not married. We don't share property. We don't have kids. We're not, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you know? It's... And, you know, all of these things, I think the ties, they're not really that... tying in many ways.
No,
I mean, it's mostly it's just perception.
I'm just trying to open it all and get it over with. I'm also eating Oreos. Oreos, the cookies of bloggers.
Now, if only they would give us money.
They
that
could.
Would be awesome.
They could, Oreo people, if you're listening.
No,
sorry,
but I think the whole thing of it's the perception of security. It's the perception that there are these ties that will hold someone back. Mm-hmm. And I think it's exactly that. It's perception.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know...
The false security blankets of monogamy. Or the false security blankets of whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you
walk down... It's not like a ring is a magical device and it keeps people faithful or in love.
Yeah, or just because you walk down an aisle doesn't mean that this is suddenly... going to be perfect and magical forever.
Right.
And what, like half the marriages fail?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of them fail within a few years. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously not anything, you can't call that necessarily, you know, security.
Mm-hmm.
And if so many of them fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing, and people do the same type of thing with kids. You know, how many times have you heard of people having kids to save a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, somehow they think that, oh, if only we go and we have kids, then somehow...
do an incredibly stressful thing and make a human being and have lots of responsibilities. That'll make it better.
Yeah, so there's a whole lot of things that people try to do. They're like grasping towards security that don't really do anything.
Sure.
And...
well, I do have to play devil's advocate a little bit on this. So, I do think that there's some security offered in getting married,
per se.
I mean, if you know...
And there's a certain legal system that's set up to provide some level of safety net.
Right.
So, like...
well, and I mean, there's some divorced, emotional security. I mean, you're a married man, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that there's some societal and some emotional and some legal type security offered by being married. I mean, so where I'm going with this. So there's like the trappings of marriage, like, we need to give your wife a fake name, by the way, or I'm accidentally going to say her real name. What should we call her?
I don't know. I'll just call her Wifey for now.
Wifey. Okay. So Wifey and you have a certain support. I mean, you're supported by your friends, your family, you know, mm-hmm. your neighborhood. There is a lot of things around to kind of support the idea of like this couple, this marriage, this,
yeah, like, you know, there's, we're like on the trappings, same insurance policies and stuff like that.
Totally.
Like the house is in both of our name.
Mm-hmm. And there's legal protections for things. If something happened to you, if something happened to her, you'd have a certain amount of security with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, there's those intangible things. Like, if I was with you as long as Wifey was, if I was with you 18 years, I'm not going to have the same security that Wifey would have. Like, everybody at work would not view me the way that they would view Wifey.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in your family would not view me the way that they would view Wifey. Your, you know, most of your close non-poly friends or whatever wouldn't view me as like they would Wifey. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously it's too early for us to talk about us. But yeah. I shouldn't have used us, but you know, whatever, some other couple.
Yeah. I definitely agree. And it's one of those things that, like, me personally, and this is like a tangent off of the security thing or insecurity thing, is, and you're really touching on the whole notion of like couples privilege,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, being a couple, being, you know, we look socially monogamous,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the rest of society looks at us as, you know, we're Cleveland and Wifey and everything's all happy. And a lot of assumptions are implicit in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really trying my best to try to be as open as possible and not play the couple's privilege card,
mm-hmm.
because it really does kind of annoy me. I have, with being shy, at the same time, I'm still trying to be open. And not from a poly perspective, but open as in, you know, being true to me and really portraying what it is about me out to the rest of the world.
Hmm.
And in many ways, that would probably add to my insecurity, because, you know, what do, you know, the whole thing of like, well, what will someone think of me if they know I'm poly?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it gets to what we were talking about before, where I'm like, me personally, I'm getting much more to the point of, if someone finds out that I'm poly and they're having issue with that, it's like, fuck them. You know, I don't really care. I'm definitely getting to that point. And
yeah.
I guess that goes right back to the insecurity thing of, you know, it's much easier said than done, but, you know, if I'm having performance anxiety, and the last thing that you really should be thinking about is thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that is going to get in the way of you doing something.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What about other areas of insecurity? Like, well, for example, I get insecurity not only about my worth as a lover, but like my worth as a, well, as a whole lover outside the bedroom. You know, mm-hmm. I worry sometimes that like Peaches is the fun girlfriend, you know? She always has all these great ideas. You know, she's always like, let's go, you know, to this arcade in Capitol Hill and let's go kayaking and let's go. I mean, she's a barrel of laughs, that woman. And like a lot of my dates with Traveler, you know, we eat dinner and play WoW and fuck and, you know, take a walk and, you know what I mean? It's not that we don't do stuff or that I'm bored, because I'm not. But, you know, I worry sometimes that like Peaches is more fun or better.
Hmm.
You know, and I get insecure about that. Well, and one of the things I started doing was thinking, well...
Well, what can you do about it instead?
Right. Like, well, if I worry that I'm not a fun lover, like, what things do I want to do that would be more fun?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started, like, you know, trying to invite my lovers to do more fun stuff. Didn't we just do something recently? I invited you to. Yeah, we got carried away.
Yeah.
Well, we're still new. It's hard to get out of the house.
Yeah. But we are doing Polycamp. Again, they're not sponsoring us.
Polycamp is not sponsoring us, but they could if they wanted to. Yay, Polycamp.
That's in a week and a half from when we're recording this. So
Polycamp Northwest.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's going to be fun. And I'm sure breeding some level of insecurity in all sorts of people, but...
Sure. But I am worried. I'm hoping that... I sort of was a catalyst for us all going. And so I'm hoping it's not totally lame and everyone hates me. I'm hoping that they'll embrace it.
But, and all of us, all of this little polycule are going to be in one cabin.
Yay.
So we'll see if we don't kill each other.
Well, honestly, I'm really looking forward to that.
It should be fun.
It'll be nice not to be missing somebody for once. For like a minute. So worth as a lover, funness, performance, competition. I'm looking at our little notes to see what we're talking about. Ah, the compare and despair. So one of the things about that, it doesn't really make me insecure to think that like Cleveland Gal rocked your world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like the other day you talked about like this amazing time you had with wifey. That makes me happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would make me feel insecure. Again, that whole disclosure thing we talked about, like the comparing thing. If you're like, oh, wifey is the best at blah, blah, blah. Or, oh, Cleveland Gal just, you know, did this thing totally amazing that you can't ever do. And it was my favoriteest thing in the world. You know, it's one thing to be like, Cleveland Gal's hot and I had a great time. It's something else to be like, she's better.
Well, I think the comparison definitely is... It gets kind of toxic,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of having fun, I mean, a lot of times if you can will yourself to be supportive and, you know, going to the whole compersion thing,
mm-hmm.
where you can be happy for someone that, yeah. oh, well, you had, you know, such an amazingly great time. I'm happy for you.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, I want you to be having as much fun as possible.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully...
Because I genuinely like you.
Yeah, and the stuff that...
That's kind of where I went with Cleveland Gal, actually. I mean, granted, I don't really feel possessive of you at all at this point. I don't know that I will, but I certainly wouldn't right now anyway. But, Yeah, like with Cleveland Gal, when I started thinking about, like, all the fun things you guys were planning and, you know, she's kinky and things like that, you know... I think when I start thinking about it, like, Cleveland's so awesome. He's so cute, and he's so fun, and he's so good to me, so nice. Like, I really want him to have good things.
And half the stuff that we did came from you in terms of the suggestions.
Yay! But when I started thinking about, like, how much I like you, and how you're this good person, and I want you to have good experiences, and I want you to have fun, and, you know, people should appreciate you. You're awesome. Like, when I start thinking that way, then I start thinking, like, yay, Cleveland girl likes you. But, you know, and it's a healthier thing. I love that feeling of compersion so much more than the whole, like, what is he doing right now? Is he having fun with Cleveland girl? Is it more fun? Is it funner than me? Is it super fun? Is it fun I can never have? Like, so, is that helpful?
So how do you cope with that? So if you find yourself going down that path of...
I have a couple of strategies. One of my favorite strategies, if I'm like really psycho, I'm having a psycho day, you know, I'm like, wah, off the rails. I like to do a total reset. I like to work out, actually. Like really, you know, do like a scene from Rocky, you know, go like run on that treadmill, you know, or like really dig in.
There's something more about like, you know, going after the heavy bag or something.
Yeah, that'd be good. Especially that'd be good. Like a, you know, remote cabin in the woods with snow and old men who'd yell at me to run through tires, like that would be perfect. But I usually just go to the gym or take like a really brisk walk, you know, listening to some like really engaging tunes. There's something about intense physical activity, intense physical exercise that'll reset your brain. Mm-hmm. It just does. It gives you endorphins. It just, you know, it's a physical, I work in mental health actually. So I'm kind of stealing here. It's scientific fact that'll reset your mind.
See, and my way of getting endorphins, there's other ways. You can eat really blazingly hot food.
That's actually not a bad idea. If you're feeling super jealous, like go for a workout, call up a friend, go eat some blazing hot wings and talk trash about
whatever.
Yeah. Yes. Distraction therapy is very wise. I think the worst thing I can do when I'm feeling insecure, when I'm feeling trapped in my head, is to stay in my head.
Yeah.
Things that get you out of your head.
Yeah. The more you're in your head, the more you keep on playing out all of the bad scenarios mm-hmm. that could be happening. Mm-hmm. And you get more insecure because you think about all of the bad things. Then you think about more of the bad things. And then eventually you just never do anything because you're afraid that anything that you do is going to cause even more bad things.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I like distraction. I like engrossing hobbies. I like painting. I like writing in my blog. I like eating Oreos. Although I shouldn't do that too much because then I really get insecure. Let's see. Oh, thought control too. Like not thought control. Like you are now going to whatever and act like a duck. No.
Quack.
Yay! I thought control. I'm thinking about thought control with myself. You got to realize after a time that certain thoughts are just not helpful, and we really shouldn't entertain them. And it's not a good neighborhood to go to. And get the hell out. When I start thinking like, oh, Cleveland girl, she's like really kinky. Like, what if she's better kinky and you guys did this and you did that? And, you know, and like, those aren't thoughts that I really need to be entertaining. Like, that's just mm-hmm. not healthy. Like, why the fuck would I do that to myself? And so when I find myself, again, like the whole, if I'm in bed having performance anxiety, kind of gently corralling myself back. Mm-hmm. If I'm, you know, having insecure thoughts about other partners or performance or a relationship or my worth as a person or whatever, I try to have some positive go-to thoughts, or I try to have some, you know, okay, that's not helpful. That's emotional cutting. Let's do something else. Yeah. And of course, like we said, being in the moment.
Yeah. That seems to be the easiest way if you can pull yourself back out of your head and just enjoy, you know, whoever you're with at the moment and whatever you're doing. And instead of thinking about the rest of the world, you know, what you have going on at work, which is, you know, one of the things that happens to me, unfortunately, I go back into work mode, and that's a really good way of taking yourself out of the moment because then you're worried about everything that could be going wrong at work. And that's not very sexy when you're trying to have sexy times.
Right. It's nice to have some go-to sexy thoughts. Like, a favorite one for me is like, what am I feeling right now? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of, you know, what am I thinking and processing and what does this mean and, you know, that kind of stuff. What am I feeling right now? What are the sensations?
So I think that was one of the really interesting things last weekend.
Mm.
When you put on a blindfold on me, that it really forced me to not be thinking about what's going on and just experiencing it.
Nice.
It was an interesting thing. Just putting it out there.
That was pretty hot. I wouldn't know. We'll have to experiment with that. Yay. So I started my very own naughty kit. I bought some cuffs and some, a blindfold and, you know, a little a little rubber flogger and some things. So I wonder too, we had talked about, so the dynamic of open relationships or poly relationships kind of bring special kinds of insecurities. One of the ones that I think of sometimes, and I don't really have a good answer for this yet, so maybe you do, or we can just talk about it. But like, can you have security and be open?
I think it's an interesting question. It's like, you know, why do, you know, I keep coming over to see you? And I, from my perspective, it's, you know, more than just the fun, sexy times that we're having. It's, you know, I have the same type of insecurity in many ways of like, what if you just suddenly stop inviting me over? And it's, I think a lot of it is just trust. It's building up a certain level of trust. Mm-hmm. And this is a subject for another podcast, you know, the notion of chemistry. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, I have a certain innate feeling that you're someone that I can trust. Mm-hmm. And trust is really the foundation of security. So that's really the opposite of insecurity.
Hmm. So like if you trust me enough to be open and to invest in and to be vulnerable with and mm-hmm. to navigate that risk well.
Exactly. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So it could be, you know, chemistry is a, you know, woo-woo way of saying, you know, naivete. But it's, you know, I still feel more of a connection with you than, you know, some random stranger.
Right.
And, you know, that was from the beginning, even. It's not, because, you know, I deal with enough random strangers that, you know, I don't, you know, on our first time we meet, you know, open up my, you know, heart and here's everything that you will have, like, here's all my bad things. And
do I know any of your bad things yet?
I don't know. I think you know most of them.
Really?
I don't have that many bad things.
What are your bad things? I'm not sure I know any.
What bad things? I have to think about that before I put it on a podcast.
yes. We'll have to... So do you think, though, that there can be security in, well, like, secondary relationships? I mean, I know, I don't think that you subscribe to, like, the strict primary, secondary, hierarchical system, but, I mean...
And I think that you can. I mean, none of this is enforced in terms of society. And none of it's enforced even through, like, a notion of, like, social contracts. Mm-hmm. But it's really what, you know, two people, you know, have between themselves in terms of the trust. And I have to, I'm saying two people purposely, because every relationship, regardless of how many people there are, it's a relationship between individuals.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, me and Seattle, me and wifey, you know, wifey and Seattle. Because mm-hmm. One day we went to the Seattle Pride Parade, mm-hmm. and all three of us were there. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, me and wifey and Seattle. It's a set of individual relationships. Mm-hmm. And the trust that you can have between every pair of people.
Yeah, I say all the time, actually, Peaches and I joke about this, that we're each other's, one of each other's most fulfilling relationships, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she and I just, we text all day long, and we're very loving to each other, and, you know, when stuff happens, like, she's one of the first people I want to call, like, you know, yeah. Yeah, ironically, she's one of my most fulfilling relationships.
And your metamour.
And my metamour. She's resisting the label, but she's my metamour, my lover's lover.
Mm-hmm.
She likes sister wife, actually. I said that jokingly, and we actually really like that. So, insecurity, security, how to cope with it. What about the fear of losing someone?
I think all of these, I think they all boil down to the what ifs. You're playing out hypothetical things. You never know what's going to happen. And if you're always thinking about what can happen, what might happen, there's no guarantee that it will happen.
True.
And it sounds like I'm punting on this because, you know, how do I deal with it? And I try to be more, you know, as much in the moment as I can. And
I can see a wisdom in this. Like, okay, the truth is most relationships fail. It's just factual. You know, statistically speaking,
hey, everyone
most can, relationships fail.
Yeah, unless, like, you get blown up in a plane crash or something.
But let me go back to this. So statistically, most relationships fail. Like, it's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the relationships that you're going to be in, and by fail, I mean don't last for the rest of your life. Although I do have some exception with the idea that just because something doesn't last 57 years is a failure. But So even with this notion that most relationships fail, the truth is some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you spend your entire relationship, you know, tilting at windmills and, you know, imagining the worst case scenario possible, it's not a very enjoyable relationship.
No.
And so you're kind of ruining
the short
time that you have with people if it's one of those relationships that fails. Or you're ruining the chances of it being one of those ones that doesn't fail.
Yeah.
Because you're naysaying it to death.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think the real takeaway is...
Be positive. Be in the moment. Be present.
Yeah, and stop thinking about all the negative things that can go wrong and focus on making positive things happen.
Yes. If you worry that your relationship's not fulfilling enough, make it more fulfilling. If you worry that you're not an exciting lover, try something new.
Yeah, if you worry that you're not... There's plenty of sex stores around.
Yeah. If you worry that they'll like someone better, be more likable. Figure out what could I do to strengthen and enhance and build and grow our relationship instead of worrying how good the other relationship is.
And stop comparing even.
Yes, stop comparing.
Just be happy in what you have.
Yes.
And not worry about what someone else may or may not have.
And enjoy what I have today.
Yeah.
Be in the now. And when all else fails, work up a sweat.
Yeah. So I think that's most of our list, and I think we've probably got to about 35 or so minutes, I think.
That's about perfect.
Cool.
Well, thanks for listening.
So until next time, this is Cleveland.
And this is Seattle Polychick.
And we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.